Welcome to ACG Case Reports Journal podcast. I'm Hrishimin Kalsi, a PGY3 internal medicine resident at University of Central Florida and also a social media ambassador at ACG Case Reports Journal. Today, I'm joined by our co-editor-in-chief, Dr. Daniel Abbas, and by our lead author, Dr. Grace Kim, interventional therapeutic endoscopist from University of Chicago. And we'll be discussing a case on spray cryotherapy-assisted dilation or cryodilation for a refractory esophageal jejunal anastomotic stricture after total gastrectomy. Dr. Kim, thanks for joining us. Let's jump in. Could you please share some case details with us and the treatment modalities that were attempted before you chose cryodilation in this patient?
Yeah, thanks so much for the introduction and for inviting me to this podcast. So we had a patient, she's 70 years old. She underwent a total gastrectomy with esophageal jejunal anastomosis and had a really severe dysphagia and PO intolerance from the anastomotic stricture to the point where she needed NJ2 feeds. She underwent serial dilations before with regular through-the-scope balloon dilators and steroids, but she didn't make enough progress and she was still on NJ2 feeds. So we decided to do the spray cryotherapy with dilation, and she did that for several sessions, and we were able to get her up to 15 millimeters, and she was able to come off of the 2 feeds. So overall, it was a successful story. The big thing to highlight with this case is that not only was the spray cryotherapy with dilation successful in this patient, but the fact that this was an altered anatomy without a stomach was something to highlight. This is really important because when you're doing spray cryotherapy, you need a venting tube that's placed in the stomach to remove the gas that gets formed as the liquid nitrogen evaporates. So this isn't just a small volume. This is a volume that rapidly expands about 700 times its original volume. And this happens within seconds. So having a large compliant reservoir, just like a stomach, is really important to have. And we always monitor patient's abdomen during each spray whenever we do this. So what this case did demonstrate is that even without a stomach where you have that large reservoir, spray cryotherapy is something that can be successfully performed, especially with the venting tube and close monitoring with the patient's abdomen throughout the procedure. And gastrectomy isn't necessarily an absolute contraindication.
And I think that was one of the interesting learning points as well, that it was safe in an altered anatomy after gastrectomy with just a tiny stomach, without stomach, I mean. And then at what point do you label in your practice a patient with benign anastomotic stricture as refractory?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So that term can sometimes be nebulous, but we generally define refractory strictures as those that have undergone at least 5 serial dilation sessions with or without steroids, but I typically say with steroids. And I want to emphasize that this is 5 appropriately performed sessions. So that's with adequate mucosal disruption, and they need to be performed at a proper frequency as well. And that's usually about 2 to 4 weeks. A common pitfall that I see is that unfortunately it's logistical issues because many patients require anesthesia because of the severe dysphagia or other GI symptoms. And sometimes it can be difficult to schedule these procedures at that recommended intervals of 2 to 4 weeks. And sometimes it's the patient's end where, you know, they may not realize that this is not just a one-time treatment and you do need repeat dilations every 2 to 4 weeks. And there's a lot of things to figure out from the patient's standpoint, right? They need to take off work, they need to get rides, etc. So it's really important to set expectations with the patients before any dilation sessions, in my opinion, so that they have an idea of what they're getting into. So for example, if a patient had like 5 dilations over a course of a year, I wouldn't necessarily deem them refractory per se.
Gotcha. And that's interesting because I think that is a big point to highlight here, that patients usually they have travel issues and they are unable to keep their appointments, or the provider is busy and unable to see them as regularly. And then I know that in this case, you already shared some of the major technical aspects with us already regarding cryodilation. And so far, cryotherapy has only been used for cases such as Barrett's esophagus and for esophageal cancers and GAVEs, right? And what made you think that this patient will benefit from cryotherapy, specifically in this case?
So your question is, why did I think the spray cryotherapy would be beneficial for this patient?
Yeah.
Yeah, great question, because it was so refractory. We've done multiple dilations with the regular balloon therapies, and she wasn't getting better. She couldn't come off the tube feeds, and it was really interfering with her quality of life. So, of course, this is a question that, you know, always comes up, like risk versus benefit. And we did talk with the patient in advance because we had to let her know, you know, without a stomach, this isn't something that widely done or performed. So, you know, this is something we would have to really closely monitor. So she understood the risks of doing this without her stomach, but we felt that this was an appropriate next step to do since she was so refractory with the conventional method.
And then during your cycle of cryodilation, what was the dosing did you use? What was your cycle length of the liquid nitrogen, and what were the number of cycles did you use?
Yeah, good question. So it depends on what the etiology is when you do spray cryotherapy. So if it's a benign etiology, so in our case, a benign stricture, each cycle is a two-session cycle of 20-second sprays. So you do two sessions of 20 seconds, and that's one cycle. And then for malignant strictures, you do three sessions of 30-second sprays. And the number of these cycles, that depends on the length of the stricture or the area that you want to treat. So the spray effect is about 3 to 4 centimeters in length. So if you have a target area that is longer than that, then you would do multiple cycles to cover all the treatment areas.
And I saw that you used several sessions of these cryodilations in your patient. If I'm not wrong, you did 6 cycles. And how frequently did you do them? Did you do them at the regular intervals, like 4 to 6 weeks, like you would do with regular dilations?
Yeah, great question. So exactly. So we each cycle, because the stricture length is, you know, only like a centimeter, a little bit less than that, because it was an anastomotic stricture, we only needed to do one cycle per procedure. So one cycle, again, is 2 sessions of 20-second sprays. And then we just did multiple of that. So we had the patient come back every 4 to 6 weeks, and then we repeated the dilations that way.
Thank you for sharing that. And you were talking about the frosting effect of liquid nitrogen, and you said that it only covers a certain area, and then depending on the stricture length, you choose your cycles accordingly. And then what does an adequate frosting effect look like? Like, how do you avoid overtreatment? I know you use a certain seconds, like 20 seconds per session. Like, how do you avoid overtreatment just by looking at it when you're doing the procedure?
Yeah, and this is a really important point. So I'm really glad that you asked this. So frosting effect is when you see this really nice, like white blanching of the mucosa, and that indicates that the spray is taking effect. So that's when your 20-second or your 30-second timer starts. So sometimes it takes a few seconds for you to see that white blanching, that frosting effect to show. So you don't want to just start the timer immediately right after you start spraying, because if you do that, then you're under-treating since you have prematurely started the timer. And then on the flip side, if you start the timer too late, then you over-treat. And this frosting effect is really important because sometimes you can have malfunctioning of the actual liquid nitrogen tank where it's not cooled properly, or the catheter gets kinked and you're not getting a good output of the spray. So if you're not really seeing an adequate blanching of the mucosa, that could be an indication that something might be malfunctioning. So you want to be able to troubleshoot that before you proceed.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's very important. And would you see any direct mucosal changes if you go on for a longer period or you start your timer late?
You would just see the frosting effect. And then if you go too late, sometimes with the naked eye, it's hard to say, but some people can have a little bit more adverse events or risk of adverse events. So post-procedural edema is like a common one after cryotherapy. So those are some things you want to look out for.
Then moving on, and then I know that this is a cryodilation. So it has two components to it. After doing the cryotherapy, you dilated the patient in the same session. And how did you decide how far to go with the dilation? Because with regular dilation, we look for mucosal disruption. Mm-hmm. However, in this case, with the mucosa being blanched, how do you decide how much to dilate in one session?
Great question. So the blanching only happens when you do the spray itself. So once your spray is done, it actually comes back to the regular mucosal color. So you will be able to see everything kind of the normal way. And so in terms of the dilation, I also still look for that good moderate mucosal tear, because that's the way that you know if you've actually done enough of the dilation. So I still look for that tear after the spray cryotherapy.
And then initially you were saying that these patients might require specific anesthesia requirements. So what is your go-to with anesthesia and positioning recommendations for these patients?
Yeah, great question. So nothing too different from my normal EGDs. So I keep my patients positioned left lateral. And unless they have really severe symptoms that require intubation, I do them under MAC, so moderate anesthesia care, and I don't necessarily intubate them. But I do all of these procedures with MAC.
And then, Dr. Abbas, from a journalist perspective, what made you guys choose this case to publish and highlight?
I think this case is a great addition to our literature, and our trainees learning about cryotherapy and dilation as a hybrid method, particularly for, you know, refractory strictures. And as you mentioned, an altered anatomy and not having a reservoir for the stomach to retain all these gaseous contents. So that was a very unique aspect of your case. And as the indications emerge of spray cryotherapy, I think this is a valuable addition to the literature and inform future applications of this technique.
That was Dr. Abbas, our co-editor-in-chief. And then moving on to our closing statements, I would say that I'm very sure we're going to be seeing more of cryodilation, especially in benign cases, benign refractory stricture cases. And you already told me much more about the ideal candidate, the one with refractory stricture, not responding to repetitive dilation sessions and steroid therapy. What would be the biggest pitfall for someone who is doing this procedure for the first time?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Technically speaking, this is actually a very easy procedure to do. It's almost like applying hemostatic spray, which is what we learn, you know, as a first-year fellow. So I actually call spray cryotherapy a very fellow-friendly procedure because the technical aspects of the procedure is very easy to learn. And I myself have started using spray cryotherapy as a general GI fellow as well, and continued on as the advanced fellow and now as faculty. And I teach this to general GI fellows, and the technical part is not too difficult. I will say where the pitfall can come from is more of the pre-procedural planning, where you really have to understand and have a good, solid understanding of when you should use this, what the indications are, what are the potential complications of this, and be able to fully educate the patients of these various aspects of the procedure before actually performing this. And I kind of alluded to this earlier too, but another pitfall can be getting used to the setup of the actual spray cryotherapy machine and being familiar with it, because, you know, sometimes you can have these possible troubleshooting that could happen. And I would say in the beginning, having a local rep who can help with that and help troubleshoot that could be a really good resource as well.
Thank you for answering that, Dr. Kim. And then you were talking about absolute contraindication, and then not having a stomach is not one of them. But any scenarios where you would avoid this kind of approach?
Yeah, that's another really important point to emphasize here, is that when you're doing this, you have to avoid, you can't have any mucosal tear or ulcerations in that potential area of the spray, because that's another risk that you can increase the risk of complications. So before you even start doing the spray cryotherapy, it's really important for you to use a distal attachment cap and get a really careful exam of the area of the mucosa that you're going to treat before you do the spray.
All right. And finally, like we said, that mostly cryotherapy has been used for other indication. This is a new indication for using it. What do you think is the evidence gap, and what do we need data on research-wise?
You know, that's really important as well. The currently, I feel like we typically use a spray cryotherapy when more as a backup and as a second-line therapy when you have something refractory. So I'd love to see more data on how this can be used as a first, like, initial therapy and how effective this would be compared to other conventional therapies.
That's an interesting take on it. Maybe something I can look into in the future as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much again for taking out the time and talking with us today. For everyone who's listening to this podcast, thank you for listening to us. This is an ACG Case Reports Journal case, spray cryotherapy for management of an anastomotic esophageal jejunal stricture. Please be sure to read the full case on our website to learn more.